Okay, good morning. We were on Daf Yud Tet, and as last week, I'm still in a state of shock. It was, I think, 34 minutes, so I've set myself a standard. Let's see how we do today. We are commenting on the second Mishnah of this third Perek. The first Mishnah, again, was what we have been calling the moral absolutes. These are the rules under which no circumstances would it be permitted, forbidden. Sexual relationships, forbidden foods, forbidden behaviors that you are liable in theory for lashes for. And then we moved, and in the context of that Mishnah, we had a lot of discussions about exceptions. If there's no action involved, if there's a remedy involved, if there was no warning, etc., etc. And we kind of carved out some space, and we had the last response to that Mishnah being, we're not queasy about punishment, we're just trying to see about when it would be applicable. And we know we're not queasy because Rabbi Yehuda would give lashes if somebody ate a sheretz, and you'd be chayav 8 lashes if you ate these kind of sheretzim, etc. And then put in brackets. And by the way, one of the sages used to say, if you need the bathroom and you don't go, that's the same prohibition as eating a sheretz, etc., etc. We got to the second Mishnah, which listed some conditional moral conditionals, which is you can't eat ma'aseh sheni until you're in Yerushalayim, or you can't eat Bikurim until you've read the recital. We're going to have two topics today. On Yud Tet Amud Aleph, the first side, we're going to be talking about Bikurim, and Amud Bet, we're going to be talking about Maaseh Sheni. I guess, just for context, what's required for Bikurim, farmers would take the first fruits to Yerushalayim, and the Kohanim would eat it. There is a point at which they cannot be eaten yet. You can't just turn up Yerushalayim and kind of put it through the mailbox of a Kohen. They had certain ritual requirements that there is a moral crime, a prohibition that they would be whipped for, Kohanim, if they ate it before something happened. And there are three views. One view is it has to just see the temple, meaning be brought to temple grounds. We don't follow that view. Second view is it has to be put down in front of the altar, but nothing else needs to happen. We do not follow that view. Well, that's going to be where we'll spend some time on this side. But our Mishnah was Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon had the same view. There has to be a recital, which is the four psukim we're going to say in four nights' time. Arami Oved Avi. That four sentences from Devarim is what has to be said. Otherwise, the Kohen can't eat the food. It would be prohibited. Now, we are going to see an exception to that. Anyone know who is, for one view, not allowed to say that? A ger, somebody who has immigrated or converted to Judaism, cannot say Arami Oved Avi, my father was a wandering Aramean, because it's just flatly, biologically untrue. Now, I will say, we don't actually follow that, halach lemaisa, and the same question comes up in our context. If somebody's converted, are they allowed to lead from the Amud and say Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu, God of our fathers, when we know that their parents were not Jewish, and they know that, and based on this Gemara, people would say they're not allowed to lead from the Amud, but we follow the Rishalmi that says they can, and the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch took that view. So if it ever comes up, nobody should feel the need to kind of take him down from the Amud or feel queasy about it. But that's going to be a view entertained here in the Bavli, that's one case where Bikurim wouldn't have the recital. But otherwise, that's a requirement for our Mishnah. And that's going to be Bikurim. And as Jay kind of, I think, honed in on last time, Bikurim, in many ways, is less about the farmer than it is about the Kohanim. Because the farmers don't eat it. They bring it to the Mishkan, they bring it to the Bet Mikdash, rather. And the Kohanim, we say, you get a crime if you eat it before this time. You need to wait for the farmer to bring it. And in some ways, even though the toil is on the farmer who's got to schlep it up, it's more for the Kohanim to see how much they depend on society. So there is an obligation for the average person to schlep their fruit so that the Kohanim can see that everything that they survive on is on the goodwill of the population, and that the best that the population has, they bring to them. And they're not allowed to eat it until they hear the population make this declaration. And in some ways, it's to make the Kohanim recognize how much they depend on everybody else. The second topic on the other side is Maaseh Sheni. This is one of the tithes that is taken in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 out of the Shemitah cycle, when a tenth of your produce is taken to Yerushalayim, and who eats that? Maaseh Sheni is the owner. So it's my food. So this has got none to do with the Kohanim. This is all about me. And Maaseh Sheni, as opposed to Bikurim, which is about the Kohanim recognizing the need for the population, Maaseh Sheni is about the population recognizing the importance of the institutions. I am forced to take my food to Yerushalayim, and I eat it. It doesn't go to anybody else. And what rituals involved in Maaseh Sheni? Yeah, there are no rituals involved. It has to get to Yerushalayim, and then I have to eat it. The whole purpose of this agricultural law, nothing to do with paying taxes, nothing to do with feeding the institutions, and it's all about me being dragged to Yerushalayim to eat, forcing me essentially to go on pilgrimage, not for communal purposes, but for personal purposes, to recognize the import of Yerushalayim, which again speaks to the context of what it means to live in a city and how important that would be. I'm a farmer. I like living out in the field. I don't have anything to do with anybody else. I'm living in peace. And the Torah insists that you find your way to Yerushalayim. Even if you get feel cramped and it feels industrial and uncomfortable and busy, you're forced to go to see how important city life is. And at the end of the daf, we'll have a very unusual case about Maaseh Sheni, which will leave up in the air. Maybe it'll get solved when Eliyahu comes on Wednesday night. So, with that background, let us begin, top of the page, Yutet Amud Aleph. There are four words from the previous Amud. Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said, Bikurim, on the context of Bikurim, then we ask the opening question, when are you chayev to perform the certain rituals about them that if you didn't do it yet, you would get lashes? Mishuro Pnei Abayit, this was the third view we mentioned we don't follow. And the view of Rabbi Yitzchak is, as soon as it enters the temple compound, you are chayev as a kohen if you eat it without the recital or anything else. Tanya, who is it like? Like the following teaching. The Tanya taught in a brighter, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Lezer says, Bikurim miksatim mechuz miksatim bifnim. If you've got Bikurim, a basket of fruit, and it is on the threshold of the temple, half in and half out, what do you say about it? He says, Shabachutz, the part of the basket that's outside, Harien Kachul Nechol Devrayim, that's not holy in any way. Shibifnim, on the inside, Harien Gehegdish Chol Devrayim, and if it's inside the part of the basket, that's considered Hegdish. So for him, it is all about whether it's inside or outside the temple compound. Once it's in, it's now designated as Bikurim, and the owners can't eat it. And I misstated the Kohanim can eat it at that point, but the owners cannot, according to this view. Full stop. Now, we have the second view. Amr of Sheshet. Rav Sheshet is Bikurim Hanacha Ma'akevet Behem Kriya in Ma'akevet Behem. Again, our Mishnah said that you have to read this declaration before you eat it, otherwise you're, as a Kohen, you get lashes. And Rav Sheshet has a different view that it has to be put down in front of the altar, but it does not have to have the recital read. Come on, who does that follow? We're trying to find who the source of this opinion is, because we know Rabbi Kiva's got a different view, Rabbi Shimon's got a different view, Rabbi Yitzchak's got a different view. Who holds this view that Rav Sheshe stated that you need to be put down, but doesn't have to be read? Now we're going to have a brighter that it comes up incidentally along the way that this is the view in the brighter. Come on, who is this like? Ki Aitana, it is like the following teaching. First word in line is Tana de Tanya, it was taught. Rabbi Yossi said, Shloshet Ramishim, Shloshet Kenim. He said, there are three things I'm going to tell you in the name of three sages. We're only going to get told one of them. And this is the one, Rabbi Yishmael Omer. And this is the view of Sheshet is following, we're going to contend, the view of Rabbi Yishmael. He says, and this is, I guess, a good question. How do I know I can't bring Maaseh Sheni today? If I'm a farmer and I take Maaseh, why can't I, meaning Truma, I understand, I can't give it to Kohanim. Korbanos, there's no Bet Mikdash. Why can't I just take my Maaseh Sheni, go up to Yerushalayim, and eat Maaseh Sheni?
It has to be eaten in Tahara.
So I'll go to Mikveh. I'll find a red cow. Oh, so that's interesting. What stopped me from bringing it to Yerushalayim, I guess, and redeeming it? So I guess, well, let's see where we end up. So Rabbi Shmuel said, Yachol yale adam maaseh sheni bizman hazeh b'Yerushalayim v'yochlenu. How do I know that you can't take it nowadays? You're a farmer. It doesn't have any ritual requirements at all. All maaseh sheni requires is being taken to Yerushalayim. Why can't I take it today to Yerushalayim and eat it? He says, Vidinhu, I have a learning that says that it's not applicable today. And I guess to answer Seth's point, which won't come up, is that he's asking, how do I know I don't have an obligation to do it, rather than how do I know I can't? He's saying, how do I know there's no chiyuv for me to try and figure out how to make this work? Vidinhu says, I've got a proof for you. Bechor Taun Havat Makam. A Bechor, which is, what's a Bechor? Yeah, also me, but different kind of Bechor, which is a firstborn animal that you have an obligation to also take to the Bet Mikdash. And a Bechor requires Havat Makam, being taken to the Bet Mikdash. Masa Sheni Taun Havat Makam. Masa Sheni requires being taken to the Bet Mikdash. Ma Bechor Enel Bifnei Abayit. Av Masa Enel Bifnei Abayit. Just as a Bechor doesn't have, you don't have to take a Bechor to the Bet Mikdash, you don't have to take Masa Sheni to the Bet Mikdash. What assumption is he making here? The two are equivalent, number one. Number two, what else are you assuming? You don't have a chiv to build a Beit HaMikdash. Okay, that seems to be also embedded to some degree. It might be in the context that we're unable to. So that's maybe number two. Number three, if I can't build a Beit HaMikdash, what is he assuming?
The chiv goes away.
Of which? Right, he's saying, oh, well, a Bechor you don't have to take, so you don't have to take Maaseh Sheni. So, well, how do I know I don't have to take a Bechor? Maybe I have to take all these things to Yerushalayim. So we're going to have to uncover that. But he starts by saying, a Bechor, obviously you don't take to Yerushalayim, so you don't have to take a Maaseh Sheni, and he's saying that they are equivalent. At which point the Gemara is going to say, before we deal with any of the other premises, Bechor and Maaseh Sheni are different, so you can't draw that comparison to start with. He says, Ma lebechor shekein ton matan dan v'mon lebeka mizbech. What are you talking about? A Bechor, first word on the line is ta'un. Requires putting blood and its innards on the mizbech. It's completely different to Maaseh Sheni. Maaseh Sheni, you take Yerushalayim and you eat it. There's no mizbech, what difference did it make? If you're taking up a Bechor, I need to put stuff on the mizbech. So obviously it's a different case. Oh, Bikurim Yochichu. Bikurim proves the point that Maaseh Sheni isn't required because Bikurim you don't do. And what does Bikurim not need? Putting on the, doesn't need sprinkling or anything like that. So obviously Bikurim should prove the point. What does Bikurim need? Putting down before it. So it does need the altar. Mala Bikurim Shekein Tumah Nochah. What are you talking about? Bikurim does need the Mizbech. You're right, it doesn't get sprinkled or put on it, but it does need to be put down near it. And buried here is, now we know that this Tana has the view that what are you required to do with your Bikurim? Hanacha, that's what it sounds like. So this is how we know Rosh Hashanah is following the view. We're going to push back on that in a second, but that's the assumption. Talmud Lomar, so Rabbi Shmuel says, okay, how do I know that you don't have to do Maaseh Sheni today? It can't be based on logic, because Bechor and Maaseh Sheni are different. Bikur and Maaseh Sheni is different. I have to find a Pasuk. So Talmud Lomar, taught in a Pasuk, V'achalta sham lefnei Hashem Elokecha, and the first continues, Maaseh Dagancha o Bechor Sonecha. Your Bechor and your Maaser. So it compares them in a Pasuk. Mekish Maaser lebechor, ma Bechor enu lebefnei abayit, av Maaser sheni, av Maaser enu lebefnei abayit, full stop. So that's the end of the Braita. And the Braita essentially asks the question, how do I know Maaser sheni doesn't happen today? Oh, well, Bechor doesn't happen today, and Maaser sheni is the same. We said, they're not the same. This needs emurim on the Mizbech. Fine. Bikurim you don't need today, and Bikurim Maaser sheni is the same. So Bikurim needs Hanacha. Said, fine. There's a pasuk that says Bechor and Maaseh are the same. You should eat it before Hashem. So once the obligation of Bechor falls away, the obligation of Maaseh Sheni falls away. Full stop. And in the middle of that, he said, Bikur maybe should work. And we said, no, because it requires Hanacha. And that's the kind of key for our point. He says, you need Hanacha for Bikurim. And that's the view we follow. Now, in the yellow, the Gemara is going to say, that's not a reasonable assumption. Im Ita. If you're right that Rabbi Shmuel thinks you need Hanacha and not Kriya, Lifroch, it should have said, Malu Bikurim Shekein Tumah Kriya V'Hanacha. Meaning, if you're right that, if you thought that you do need Kriya, it should have said it needs Hanacha and Kriya. And the fact that it just said Hanacha proves the point that he thinks it only needs Hanacha. And now he's going to push back. Am Ravashi. Ravashi says, it's possible that he thinks there's no obligation to do Kriya, but he definitely thinks it's a mitzvah. Meaning, b'di'evit, if it didn't happen, you don't need the Kriya. But he thinks you need Kriya, so why wouldn't he say it's part of his comment anyway? Lema mitzvah v'lifrach, he should have turned around and said, it needs Hanacha and Kriya. And that wouldn't be about ma'akavet, it wouldn't be about ikuvah, it just be about mitzvah. So that doesn't prove the point. So why doesn't he say Kriya at this point? Elam Ravashi. Ravashi says Kevin de Ikav Bikurei Ager, because you've got the first fruits of the ger. So he didn't mention Kriya because it's a controversial issue. But you can't prove from here that he doesn't think you need Kriya. It could be that Kriya is Ma'akevet in all cases when kriya is applicable, but in the case of a ger, it wouldn't be, so he doesn't mention it. So this is an odd moment, because the Gemara at this point has said, oh, so he doesn't follow Rabbi Shmuel, and we're not going to follow up on that again. We're not going to say, okay, so who does he follow? We said, who does Rosh Hashanah follow? He follows Rabbi Shmuel in this brisa, because obviously the implication is Hanachah is required and kriya isn't. We said, no, that's not the implication. He just doesn't mention kriya because of the case of ger. So who does he follow? The Gemara doesn't pick up on that again. So it might be that we don't really follow this denial of the assumption, and that kind of stays in place. Now, the Gemara picks up and starts to try and figure out some of the loose ends in the braita we just mentioned, because there are some odd moments. Vilihader dinah, he said, how do I know you can't bring Maaseh Sheni today? And to some degree, the Gemara almost gets distracted by this question of Bizman Hazeh. And we're going to see a couple, in a moment, we're going to see a stunning moment where the Gemara entertains, oh, Rabbi Shmuel was thinking about a very particular case, and it's going to talk about something horrific so casually, it's unthinkable. Anyone seen that movie, White House Down? Anyone heard of that movie, White House Down? Yeah, Marsh on top of it, there you go. What about that Designated Survivor? Anyone seen that movie? The series? So these are catastrophic events where the center of American democracy gets exploded and the country's on edge and everything falls apart. What's our equivalent for that? The Jewish equivalent? Korban HaBayis, the destruction of the Beit Mikdash. And they're going to talk about, oh, the case he's talking about is if you bring a korban in the middle of the korban. If in the middle of the Beit Mikdash being destroyed, you brought a korban and, you know, you brought it before it was destroyed and then you had the blood left after it was destroyed, can you eat it, the meat? Talk so casually about some horrific event in Jewish history, which is a signal both of resilience and principle. It's almost like the Gemara says, who does Rosh Hashanah follow? And then we mention Bishmal, and then we get caught up in this thicket of loss, resilience, the purpose of population being in cities, what we've lost by losing our sovereignty, etc., etc. And we don't really follow up on that loose end about Rosh Hashanah, but that's where we're going to end up. So the Gemara says, hold on a minute. Rabbi Shmuel's question was, how do I know I don't do Maaseh Sheni today? Meaning, how do I know that we didn't really lose anything by losing the Beit Mikdash and sovereignty and kind of moral religious law looming over society? How do I know I didn't lose anything? Maybe it's just this is a holy place. I bring it to Yerushalayim, I eat it here. He says, no, you can't do Maaseh Sheni. Number one, Bechor doesn't happen, so you can't do Maaseh Sheni. And we said, well, that doesn't work because Bechor needs a Mizbech. There's a technical need that's absent. He said, fine, Bikurim. We said, no, well, that needs Hanacha. So now the Gemara is going to say, well, why don't you say both these things aren't in operation and Bechurim and Bechor aren't the same? So you can say the common denominator is anything that was brought to Yerushalayim is no longer brought to Yerushalayim, which would include Maaseh Sheni. So the first word in line is Psike, it's right at the end of the yellow. V'liyahada dina, so why doesn't Rabbi Yishmael answer this? Instead of going to a Pasuk and say, I need to find a Pasuk to compare Bechor and Maaseh Sheni, V'teidi baba mahatzad, he should say, what's the common denominator of Bechor and Bikurim? Both of these things go to Yerushalayim, both of these things do not go to Yerushalayim today, so we should combine them, even though they're different from Maaseh Sheni. They're also different from each other, so there's a common threat. Mishum de'ikala mefrach, the Gemara says, well, actually, Bechor and Bikurim are not identical, but they are common enough that they're different from Maaseh Sheni. Mala hatzad ha'shavash ha'ben she'ken yesh behem tzad mizbeach. They both require the mizbeach. You're right, the Bechor isn't put down in front of it, and you're right, Bikurim isn't burnt on top of it, but they both need the altar. And Maaseh Sheni doesn't. So you can't necessarily draw the conclusion, and this again embedded in here is, why are things brought to Yerushalayim? Is it because of ritual obligation to be in front of a Mizbeach, or is it because the city precincts are a sacred place? And we're saying, well, Bechor isn't brought, Bikurim isn't brought, so Maaseh Sheni either. And the Gemara is saying, these are fundamentally different obligations. These two, Bechor and Bikurim, they are tied to the altar. It's either put down in front of the altar or it's burned on top of the altar. And if you don't have an altar, you're stuck. Ritual is impossible. Maaseh Sheni, this is about celebrating Yerushalayim. This is about celebrating a Jewish city. This is about celebrating kind of earth, geography. And the assumption we're being made is the only way I can learn this out is through a pasuk. And the biblical text ties them together to suggest that actually this is all part of one obligation to celebrate the city precincts under a ritual culture, under a religious culture. It is not just geography. for Maaseh Sheni. This is all part of a larger picture. Full stop. And now we've got Micah Savar. And I should have changed color here probably. First brother line is Shekane. And Micah Savar. And now we're saying, hold on a minute. Let's go back to first principles. We've now established the Bechor, Bikurim are different to Maaseh Sheni logically. But how do you know Bechor isn't bought today? Where do you get that from? You're just assuming there's no Bechor nowadays. Where does that come from? Micah Savar, what is your view about Yerushalayim generally? If your assumption is, Rabbi Yishmael, that once Jerusalem is sanctified, it doesn't lose its sanctity. It's a holy city, and that's full stop. That's it. If that's true, I feel a Bechor Nami. Bechor, of course, should be bought today, because Yerushalayim is still sacred. Why wouldn't you bring Bechor up to Yerushalayim? And if you think the city, the sanctity dissipated with the destruction of the temple, we should really explore whether this is a question or not. And he hasn't even entertained maybe Bechor should be bought, maybe it shouldn't be bought. He's just assuming it isn't. Why is he making that assumption? Amar Ravina, Ravina saying he's thinking about a very specific case. La'olam kasava kijal ashad v'la kijal adilavo. He thinks that the Kedusha dissipates over time, and his test case to prove his point is v'hacha, this case. First one line is la'atid. Be'bechor, talking about a Bechor, shenizrak damo kodim churban habayit. You had the Bechor, and you caught the blood, and you sprinkled it on the altar, and you'll think, oh great, now I can eat my meat, and then you get interrupted by... Yeah, somebody comes and knocks the temple down, destroys Jewish life. V'charev habayit, the house got destroyed, v'adan b'sarukayim, and you're still holding your shawarma. You think, well, I know that was tragic, but I am hungry, and I'm holding my shawarma. Can I eat this? Or is this, meaning the blood was put on the Mizbeach while it was still here. Everything's gone now, and I've still got my meat. And again, if I wasn't being comedic, you would say, I sprinkled the blood, there was some horrific event. Armies invaded, the temple's been destroyed, people have been slaughtered, and I, like the Maccabees, as we imagine in these videos, saved a piece of meat from this Bechor, and I put it in a bag, and I fled out to a cave. And I'm sitting here, and I think, can I cook this to hold on to the vision of what was lost? Or is this the end? This is still attached. Do I have my memory still? And Ravina says, Makshimnan, this is the fourth last line, we compare Basaro Ladamo, we compare the meat to the blood. Ma Damo b'mizbeach, af Basaro b'mizbeach. Just as the blood requires the altar to be present, so does the meat. So he says, in this very unusual case, you would not eat that meat, because we compare the two together. There's a verse, and I put it for you, on the right in Rashi, in the first green, De'idgish Pesar al-Adam, we compare the two, Dechtiv, it says, Ve'eit damam tizrak al-Mizbech, v'saram yelecha, in the same pasuk, dam and basar appear. He says, so in this case, I know that if blood was sprinkled, but you couldn't have the meat in the same, while the Mizbech was still around, you weren't allowed to eat the meat. So obviously, you can't bring it after the temple's destroyed, Bizman Hazeh. Now he knows Bechor can't be brought. Now in the pasuk that compares Bechor to Maaseh Sheni, through a Hekesh, I know that can't be brought. And now this is a logical case. How do I know you can't eat the Bechor meat? What really requires the Mizbeach, essentially? The dam, right? The Zrika, meaning I can't sprinkle blood on the altar without the altar. So that's the only thing that I know needs the altar. We said, well, you've got a Hekesh comparing the blood to the meat. So now I know the meat needs the altar. Now, how do I know you can't bring Maaseh Sheni today? We have a comparison, a Hekesh from the meat to the grain. And there is a principle that we, some people say every day in the Rabbi Shmuel in the morning, which says that you can't do a lamed min a lamed. You can't learn a hekesh from a hekesh in the context of kodshim. So this idea that I know blood needs a mizbech, and therefore through a hekesh, a comparison, the meat needs a mizbech, and then I've got another comparison to tell you Maaseh Sheni needs a mizbech, this is an invalid learning procedure is going to be the Gemara's complaint. Umekish masiv lechor, full stop. V'chi dava halamed behekesh, chozim alad behekesh. Can you learn one hekesh from the next? You can't do that. Answer, masa dagan chulin hu. Well, it's not kodshim, because Maaseh Sheni isn't kodshim. Maaseh Sheni is chul, it's grain. It's not kodshim kalim, kodshim, let's say. So hanicha Lamanda Amma over the page, Lamed Azlinan. That's all very well according to the view that you decide in a Hekesh to follow the thing you're learning too. And in that case, this isn't Kodshim Kodshim. Ella Lamanda Amma Batam Lamed Azlinan. But the person who says you follow whatever you're implying from, this is a Hekesh from Kodshim, from Kodshe Kodshim to Kodshe Kodshim. And this is from Kodshim Kodshim again. And that's an invalid learning procedure. Ella Lamanda Amma Batam Azlinan Mikla Mema. What are you going to say to that view that says you follow that? There's only one Hekesh here. Blood and meat, not really Hekesh. That's one thing, full stop. So that's the end of topic one and Amud one, talking about Bikurim, although we got distracted along the way. Again, the point was, our Mishnah says, you have lashes as a Kohen if you eat Bikurim before the recital. And we said, oh, there's a different view that you don't need the recital, you just need to put it down. Who's that view? We said it was Rabbi Yishmael, who along the way in this Mishnah talking about Masa Sheni mentions Bikurim Nid Hanacha. We said, that's not the true implication. And then we got distracted talking about Bizman Azeh. How do I know I can't bring Masa Sheni? How do I know I can't bring Bechor? And we ended up with this very unusual case where you've sprinkled the blood, Jewish life gets destroyed, and you're standing there with your shawarma wondering, can I eat it still? And the answer was, no, there had been a rupture in Jewish life, which is, again, a kind of tragedy inserted into this political masechta. We're all talking about how do I live as a thriving Jewish society. We had the first chapter that spoke about the adjudication of cases of justice, the impossibility of truth. We had the second chapter talking about how attentive we need to be in cities to other people. And now we're talking about the application of moral law, which, of course, we've mentioned a couple of times, will finish with the famous Agarata of Rabbi Akiva looking over the ruins of Jerusalem with a fox wandering around, laughing while everybody else is in tears. And this is kind of the first intimation we're heading that direction. Jewish life can get ruptured, which means the Masha Sheni can't be bought, the Bikurim can't be bought, the Bechor can't be bought. All these tenets of Jewish society, which depend on gratitude on the part of Kohanim to the people, gratitude on behalf of the people to the city. If you destroy moral law, if you ruin the Bet Mikdash and we can no longer apply moral law, Jewish life is a shadow of itself, is the way that Chazal feel, and that's how we're kind of heading in that direction. Next section. Our Mishnah on Yud Zayin, which was Mishnah 2 of this chapter, said, Kodshe Kadoshim, if you eat the Holy of Holies, and then it goes on to say, and if you have Maaseh Sheni Chutz Lachoma. So I'm a farmer, I live in Caesarea. Anyone been to Caesarea? Yeah, so let's say I live in Caesarea. Got some nice homes there. It's not going to happen anytime soon. Let's say I'm living in Caesarea. I set aside my Maaseh Sheni, and I start eating it. I get lashes. And now the Gemara is going to say, hold on a minute. The first mission of the Perek said, if you eat Maaseh Sheni while you're Tamei, you get lashes. Or no, it says, if you eat Maaseh Sheni that you haven't redeemed, you get lashes. How's that any different? Maaseh Sheni Chutz Lachoma or Maaseh Sheni you haven't redeemed sounds like exactly the same thing. Yes? No? Maaseh Sheni have not redeemed, Maaseh Sheni Chutz Lachoma. Sounds very similar. And the Gemara is going to say, you taught in the first Mishnah, if you have Maaseh Sheni you didn't redeem, you get Malkus. And here you're saying, if you eat Maaseh Sheni Chutz Lachoma, you get Malkus. Sounds like the same thing. And now we're going to set up the distinction we've been making all along, which is that first Mishnah is talking about moral absolutes. It's not talking about a thing that will become permitted. And in our context, we're talking about something that will become permitted. So, Tanina Chada Zimna, you already taught, this is the fourth line in the red, you already taught once that you can't have Maaseh Sheni outside the walls. We taught Maaseh Sheni v'hekdash lo niftu. That was in the first Mishnah. If you have Maaseh Sheni that's not been redeemed, you get lashes. Sounds like exactly the same thing as Maaseh Sheni Chutz Lachoma. Am Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina. No, you're not paying attention. Sefer, the second Mishnah, B'Maaseh Sheni Tahor V'Gavra Tahor D'Ka'achil Chutz Lachoma. We're talking about somebody who's pure, the food is pure, and you're just eating outside the wall. This will be permitted. If you go to Yerushalayim, you will be able to eat it. This is a moral conditional. Reisha, the first Mishnah of our chapter, B'Maaseh Sheni Tameh. The Gavra Tameh, the Ka'achal Leib Yerushalayim, we're talking about food that will never be permitted. You're in Yerushalayim already, but your Tameh, or the food is Tameh, so you can never eat it, and that's when you get lashes. And again, that first mission was talking about cases that will never be permitted, and we're now getting closer and closer and closer to moral laws that apply to the person rather than objectively. We'll get the next mission on the next stuff we'll get to is going to start getting closer to home and talking about tattoos on the body, ripping hair off the body. It's me, it's my body, nobody else is getting hurt. And here we're saying, not only is nobody getting hurt, but this will be permitted soon. There's nothing inherently problematic about this food. And if you're going to tell me, well, if you eat tameh food in Yerushalayim, you're doing some sort of harm to the moral fabric because this food is deeply problematic. This food isn't deeply problematic. I just need to take it to Yerushalayim. You're telling me the fact that I haven't schlepped it 2 miles makes this a crime? I'm saying, yes, you have an obligation to take it there and wait until it's there. So now, the Gemara says, hold on a minute. If you're going to assume that that first Mishnah is talking about, oh, you're in Yerushalayim, but the Maaseh She'ni is tameh and it's a crime to eat it. How do you know it's a crime to eat Maaseh She'ni and it's tameh? Maybe it's only a crime to eat it at Chutz L'Choma, but if it becomes tameh along the way, you can eat tameh Maaseh She'ni without getting lashes. It's not ideal, but who says it's a crime? So this is what Gemara says, Manale, first word in the lane is to Mechayev. How do I know that Chayev Mishum Tumah, that if the Maaseh She'ni products are Tumah, you get lashes for eating it? The Tana, we've got a teaching. Rav Shimon said, Lo b'yaltim emenu b'tameh, you can't destroy it while you're tameh, meaning you shouldn't eat it while it's tameh. Ben sha'ani tameh v'hu tahor, ben sha'ani tameh v'hu tameh, whether I'm tameh or the food is tameh, you can't eat it. However, v'heichan muzal achila eni yodeh, Rav Shimon indicates, I don't know where the warning is in the Torah, I just know there's a pasuk here that says, Lo b'yaltim emenu b'tameh, you can't eat it while you're tameh. Usually we need a more of a warning. In addition, so the Gemara is now going to fill in the warning. Tumat haguf, how do I know that tumat haguf is a crime? Behejiktiv, it says outright, nefesh reshtigabo v'tama ad'arev lo'echal mekadoshim. If you're tameh, you can't eat kodshim. So there's a warning that kodshim generally can't be eaten when you're tameh, and we apply that warning to this context, where you can't eat maaseh she'ni if it's tameh. Ela tumat atzmo minayin, what happens if the food became tameh, but I'm tahor, how do I know you can't eat that? Dichtiv, there's a verse that says, Lo tuchal lachol sha'arecha, you cannot eat maaseh she'ni b'sha'arecha, in your gates. What does that mean? Ulahalanu omer, in another context, it says, b'sha'arecha, in the context of b'chor, it says, in your gates, tochlenu ha'tameh v'hator, you can eat it while you're tameh and tahor. V'tani deber b'shmal, b'shmal, who's from the previous Amud, teaches, in the context of b'chor, this means, afilu tameh v'tara ochlin b'kara achar v'en choshishin. Two of us are living in the city. We had a bechor, we took it to Yerushalayim. We got part of the bechor back for us to eat. We took it back to our city. We're about to sit down and eat something. And the Mishnah teaches, if you're, one of you is tameh and one of you tahor, it doesn't matter. Why doesn't it matter? The assumption is, what the tameh person is going to touch the meat in the middle of the bowl, it's going to become tameh. The whole thing is going to become tameh. And the tahor person is now eating the tameh. And we say, it's not a crime. That's in the context of bechor. And that says, b'sha'arecha you can. In the context of Maaseh She'ni, it said, b'sha'arecha you can't. The assumption is what we allow here with the Bechor, we don't allow there. Tameh, Maaseh She'ni is a crime. V'kam rachmana, and the Torah says, heich tameh d'shari lech gabi tahor hatam. The tameh which a tahor person is allowed to eat there with Bechor, hachalo techel, in our context, you can't. Full stop. So what we established so far, Maaseh She'ni, that is not redeemed inside Yerushalayim, if it's tameh and you eat it, it's a crime. So that was in the first Mishnah. Tameh maaseh she'ni is a crime inside Yerushalayim. And we've taught in the second Mishnah, tahor maaseh she'ni outside Yerushalayim is a crime. So there are two crimes with this maaseh she'ni that I'm meant to eat in Yerushalayim. One is outside before I take it in, while I'm tahor, and one is inside. I've gone all the way, but now it's tameh, and if I eat it, it's a crime. Now the Gemara say, hold on a minute, you're telling me you've schlepped your Maaseh She'ni to Yerushalayim. Now it's become tameh, what can I do with it? What should I do with this Maaseh She'ni? I took it all the way to Yerushalayim, it's become tameh, what should I do? What are the options? So we seem to be assuming you can redeem it, because the Mishnah said, Maaseh She'ni shelo niftu. And that's talking about when it's tameh in Yerushalayim. So you can redeem it? Say again? Meaning you would now say, this food is no longer Maaseh She'ni, I'm transferring the sanctity of Maaseh She'ni onto this money, and I'm, with this money I'm going to buy other Maaseh She'ni. And the fact that it's tameh is not a problem anymore, because it's not Maaseh She'ni, it's just food. So I'll get it taken out, and I'll get... So that seems to be an odd thing to do. You've designated this as Maaseh She'ni. Where can you redeem Maaseh She'ni? Outside Yerushalayim. How am I allowed to redeem Maaseh She'ni inside? It's come in now. I can't transfer. That's the assumption. The Gemara is going to say in the yellow, Minale Dvar Pedio. How do you know you can redeem Maaseh Sheni once it's in Yerushalayim? Just because it comes Tame, maybe you have to burn it. Who says that you can redeem it? Dam Rabbi Lazar taught, Minale Maaseh Sheni Shenitma Shepodonato Afilu Yerushalayim. How do I know that Tame Maaseh Sheni I can redeem even inside Yerushalayim? Talmud Lama, because it teaches you don't have to do Maaseh Sheni Kilo Tuchol Se'eto, which literally means if you can't carry it. But he says, Ein se'et, what does se'et mean? It doesn't mean carry, it means achila. You can redeem it if you can't se'eto. He says that means if you can't eat it. How do I know you can't eat it? Shne'emar v'yisam ma'aseh otmeit panav. 5 points, everyone knows where that's from. Where's that from? Bereishis mem gimel. Yeah. So there was a cost-benefit analysis in using the one with vowels. I no longer have access to the online one with vowels to copy and paste, but I took these pictures from the Koren English version. They've got the vowels in it, but they don't have the psukim on the side. They just got that reference, which is irritating. But what can you do? So this is from the end of Miketz, when Binyamin and the brothers are sitting around for a meal with Yosef in Mitzrayim, and it says he set them all in their birth order, and they all had a portion in front of them. V'yisam maseot meit panav, and they all had portions from before them. And so that's talking about a portion of food eating. So it means, lo tuchal seito, if you can't eat it, you can redeem it. That's his proof. So if you're in Yerushalayim, the Maaseh Sheni became Tame, you've entered the precincts, and we've said, now that you're in, it's Maaseh Sheni, you can still redeem it. Even though we thought that was just a loophole, so you don't have to schlep. Amr Bibi Amr Abasi. Rav Bebai said in the name of Rav Abasi, Minayla Maaseh Sheni Tahor. How do I know that if it's pure Maaseh Sheni, Shepodna Ta'afil P'siya Achat Chutz L'choma? Now, traditionally, if I live in a lot, and we're assuming for these purposes a lot's part of Israel, in a way that would make my food sacred, I have to take Maaseh Sheni Yerushalayim. Let's say I've got a huge agricultural industry down in Eilat, and my maaseh, my tithe, is going to be tons of food. Now we've got trucks, but pre-trucks, all I've got is donkeys. I have to schlep a whole 10 tons worth of food up Yerushalayim to eat it there. I do? What can I do instead? I redeem it. I say, okay, all of this, the value is $100,000. I'm doing very well as a farmer. I'm now going to take up $100,000 in my checkbook or my credit card, because I don't have a truck, but I've got a credit card, then I'm going to Yerushalayim and I'll spend however much money in Yerushalayim. And that's what I'll do. What happens if I don't live in Eilat, but I live, what's near Yerushalayim? Even closer, what's that? Bet Lechem. Yeah, you're going to do a lot of redeeming. Something even closer. What about that literally borders Yerushalayim? Maladumim? Is that border Yerushalayim?
Ramot.
I mean, the whole of Israel is pretty close. Let's say Ramot, because that's like basically Yerushalayim. So I live in Ramot, and I think that's a schlep. I don't want to take everything to Yerushalayim. And let's say I don't even have 10 tons. Let's say I've got a small garden in my small Ramot apartment, and I've got a small allotment, and I've produced 10 tomatoes, and I have to take one, assuming that's what I need to do. And I don't want to schlep it. Can I say, I'm going to take $5 and I'll go to Yerushalayim and spend it there instead of taking the tomato? Yeah, we're going to say, yes, you can. But the Gemara is assuming, why would we permit this? It sounds like the whole redemption option is to stop you having to go a long distance with a lot of stuff. So, minayin lamaaseh sheni tahor, how do I know that if this is pure, shepodinoto, that I can redeem it, afilu b'siya achat, even if I'm just 1 footstep outside the wall? And again, the core of this question is, there is something about being inside the city that is fundamentally different about being outside. And it doesn't matter whether you're 1 step or 40,000 miles. If you're outside the city, you are outside the city. Shanae Marin, how do I know I can redeem it? Kilo tuchol se'eto, because it says if you can't carry it. So it's not about distance, it's about schlepping. And if you're schlepping from inside to outside, it doesn't matter how far away you are, you can redeem it. But you just told me that pasuk teaches you can redeem it inside if you can't eat it. How can you now rely on that pasuk to tell you I can redeem it outside if I'm 1 step away? It could have said you can't eat it. It uses an ambiguous word to tell you can't carry it. Maseito, So obviously Sato comes to include that you can't carry. Well, why are you being weird about this word? It's not that ambiguous. It means carry. Just say it only means if you can't carry it, you can redeem it. In Yushalayim, you have to burn it if it becomes Tameh. There are other words it could use to mean just carry. My seito shmaminatarti. The word seito is ambiguous purposely to tell you. If you're in Yerushalayim and it becomes tamei so you can't eat it, you can redeem the maaseh sheni. If you're outside Yerushalayim and it's one step outside and you don't want to take it in but it's pure, you can still redeem it. So it seems to be there's two notions there. One that is fundamentally different to be outside the city than inside, and the inability to eat it is a big problem. This is not about the food being sacred in the sense that, oh, I can't eat it now, so I just burn it, because this is about celebrating the sanctity of the food. The central purpose of Maaseh Sheni is for me to eat in Yerushalayim. And if you can't eat it, if you're not in Yerushalayim, you can redeem it to make that possible. We are, Maaseh Sheni, the premise is, we insist, and Hashem insists, that you need to be eating inside the central city of the Jewish people, because that is a fundamentally different experience that we want everybody to be tied to in the nation. We're going to finish with these five lines. Yati Reb Chanin Reb Hoshea. Reb Chanin Reb Hoshea was sitting, and they asked him this question, saying, you're telling me it's fundamentally different to be inside Yerushalayim than it is outside, and it's key for everybody to be connected to the central city. I'm going to ask you a question. Apitcha de Yerushalayim Mahu. What if somebody is in the gateway of Yerushalayim? At which point you're thinking, oh, leave me alone. But I think I've mentioned before, there's a Gemara in Bava Batra when there's a discussion about if there's a lost bird, we decide who it belongs to if it's within 50 amot of the dovecot. If it's within 50 amot of your dovecot, it belongs to you. Otherwise, it's a wild bird. You can't take ownership. And I think it's Rabbi Yirmiyah says, what happens if the bird has got one foot on one side of 50 amot and one foot on the other side? And remember what happens to Rabbi Yirmiyah? So Teku's the usual response. They kick him out the Bet Mikdash and they say, get out of here with your stupid questions. Get out. At which point all the commentators wonder, don't we have questions like that all the time? And what's special about that question? So we'll leave that. But this is that kind of question. You're in the gateway of Yerushalayim. Am I in or am I out? And again, it seems the theme of this meditation is, what does it mean to be attached to a population? What does it mean to feel part of a community? So what if I'm kind of hanging in the gateway? Pshita, asking Reb Hoshea this question, said, it's obvious to me, hu b'chutza masa u'bifnim, if you're outside but you've got the basket of food in front of you, masa sheni's in front of you, and that's inside the city precincts, kal tuhu mechitzot, it's part of the city, the fruit's inside, I get that. Hu b'fnim masa b'chutza, but what if you're inside, you're backing in, I'm inside Yerushalayim, this is the line, the fruit is outside, this is my masa sheni, I can only redeem it if it's outside Yerushalayim, or if it becomes Tamei once it's inside. So it's Tahor now, and it's outside. We said, even if you're one step outside, you can redeem it. What if I step in, but my food's out here? Can I redeem it still, or not? Which, again, would be self-defeating, like, come all this way. I don't want to take it in anymore. I want to redeem it now. Or, you know, the positive reading is you're standing there, you're holding it, and you see somebody sitting over there who doesn't have any food, and you think, oh, I want to give this to them. Money's no use to them right now. I'll give them this, and can I redeem it or not? Am I inside or am I outside? So he said, what happens if my food outside and I'm inside? Tanlua husabed Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. There was this elder who was a part of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's school, and he said, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom. The verse says, if the place is distant mimcha from you, you can redeem it. And what does from you mean? Mimlotcha, it means from your fullness, meaning for whatever is part of you. Meaning if I'm wearing a rucksack, which is probably a more realistic version, I've got all my food in the rucksack and I'm carrying it and I step in Yerushalayim, the rucksack's behind me. Is it in or is it out? It says it's part of you, so it's in Yerushalayim. So someone says, oh, fine, I'll get you now. By Rapapa chimed in and said, Nakit Leba Kanya Mai. What happens if it's not a rucksack or not in a basket, but you've got it on one of those sticks? You know, when you told stories about a little kid who has to walk out, kicked out of home, you've got one of the sticks with a little sack tied on the end. So I'm walking in Shalom and I've got this stick over my shoulder and it's hanging on the end of the stick. Is that in or is that out? At that point, I would say, okay, Rapapa, it's been a long day. And the Gemara says, Teiku. We'll have to leave that. I don't know. And it's odd to me that that should be so distinct from me wearing a rucksack or holding a basket, that it's on a stick and it's further out, why would that be any different? And it strikes me again that there's something deeper at play here. And what we'll get to, we're going to stop here. Next time we'll start with the yellow. We'll talk about Masa Sheni, which will take us over to the next Amud halfway down. Then we'll have a new Mishnah talking about tattoos, ripping out hair. And we'll get to the point of how many hairs would be a problem. What happens if you ripped it out for a different reason and then it coincided with why you ripped it out? And there'll be some practical questions that come up occasionally. Please God, we should never know this, but sometimes for medical procedures now, people need to have tattoos applied for various reasons. There are questions about, am I allowed to have a tattoo if it's not for the reason that's being prohibited here? And that comes up along the way. But in the meantime, I wish you all a Chag Kashrut Sameach. We are in suspense until, I think, 3 weeks from today. Next week's Chol HaMoed, the week after that is 2 days after Pesach, and then we'll resume the week after that. So not April 16th, but the week after that. So thank you all.